Solutions to Homelessness, Episode 4 of 5.
There's nothing wrong with being successful. There's nothing wrong with having a lot of money, especially if we see that in addition to taking care of ourselves, it's natural to have an urge to want to give some of our excess to people that don't have an opportunity to care. Thanks for tuning in and welcome to The Missing Conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about the addiction to wealth, homelessness as being just a symptom of a greater societal addiction. As I even say that, I want to be very careful because I realize those could be fighting words. And I'm not meaning it as fighting words. And I'm not meaning it to pin blame. What I'm trying to do is have a real focus on the people that have had the greatest fortune to take a look at how their relationship to wealth is like an addiction in the sense that it's narrowed their focus to leave out the homeless community as being a fervent need to address. Because clearly, the people that have the greatest power are in the best position to actually influence the course of our country and the course of isolation and compartmentalization between the wealthy and the disimpoverished. In this episode, we're going to explore the problems with society's general addiction to wealth, the acquiring, the retaining, and the consuming of it. And it really stands as one of the most pervasive forms of approved societal addictions. And I use the word approved because it's not only approved, actually, it's idealized. It's right in there with our big sports figures or our movie stars or our celebrities. And it's very important that we see that slant, especially as we contrast it with something like, how can we all have a quality of life to our maximum potential? I'd like to, before I begin beyond that, introduce my closest friend, Dave, who's really been a partner in every aspect of my life since I was a puppy. And partner in the Global Bridge Foundation. So I'm incredibly grateful to have Dave join me and be able to have a back and forth with him to help really bring lucidity to the conversation.
And Robert, thank you for the opportunity to be here to share in your passion and our passion around this issue. And in particular, just the subject matter of this particular episode, this podcast, hits home. And I really want you to clarify something. When we talk about addiction to wealth, I want to ask you to clarify if you mean people that already have their means and are wealthy, or if you also are including people who aspire to be wealthy but aren't wealthy yet.
Great question. Definitely both. I think the American dream really left out and leaves out the wholesome community in America. It's largely, if it's looked at closely from my vantage point, and I think our vantage point, kind of an embarrassing dream. Like, let's see how I can really create a wonderful lifestyle for myself, for my family, for those that I love. Don't really have to pay attention in my dream to those that are starving, those that are homeless, those that are impoverished. So I think right from the very beginning of school or parenting, it's so important that we expand that American dream, There's nothing wrong with being successful. There's nothing wrong with having a lot of money, especially if we see that in addition to taking care of ourselves, it's natural to have an urge to want to give some of our excess to people that don't have an opportunity to care. So people that are coming into it, that are in college or in high school, junior high school, deciding what career they want to go into, it's so important to influence or to consider, does it make sense to just think about me and mine? Or does it need to be me, mine, and others that are suffering more than I am?
So in effect, what you're saying is anything that I give, if I have that point of view, diminishes my wealth or my aspiration to have wealth. And therefore, I'm not able to do it because I'm still on that road. I'm still focused in that direction. And so things like homelessness and more things in that direction don't get addressed because they take me off my target.
I mean, that's perfectly expressive of the American dream. And I think that's exactly right. My target is wealth, and you're giving me a little less wealth. What's not happening in that is a holistic perspective of, even if I build wealth and I'm unwittingly creating an enemy that's alienated from me, that's going to be knocking on my window when I'm at a traffic light, I need to open up to see that I'm not even serving myself in the best way possible. Yes, I might have more money in my bank account. And yes, it feels better, but it feels better because I've been conditioned to believe, not so much presented this way, that my net worth is equal to my self-worth. My net worth, if it has more, gives me more security, no matter how much I have. And that illusion, I believe, really needs to be targeted, because there isn't a point that many people have that are wealthy where they really recognize, I have enough now, and I get to open up a place where I can be generous. And it's not from guilt, and it's not from scarcity. The whole point here isn't to have people go, oh man, I feel really guilty because I haven't given enough to the homeless. The whole point is, let's see, if I really open up, what's my best self? What does my best self tell me to do? Does it really tell me to have a tremendous focus on just gaining more and more wealth? Or does it include the survival of other people? Does it include things like, which we're not focusing on now, but we will at another time, global warming? Does it include issues of our time that threaten our survival? Am I really taking care of my kids and my loved ones if I only take care of them financially? Or am I losing the ship that we're living on?
As you say that, and it's so poignantly pervasive and real, and again, with people both that have money and with people that aspire to have money. And yet at the same time, the dominant value system is to, quote, give for the poor. In our Judaic Christian society, that's the supposed value. And I say supposed because it is this conflict fundamentally that we're talking about. On one hand, you're going to, many people go to a church or go to whatever their religion of choice may be, and there's a certain value system. At the same time, they're out there and they're trying to accumulate, and how to reconcile the two and the conflict between the two and what it takes to really take in everything around you that includes both of those two.
That's a very careful contemplation, or more accurately, it requires a very careful contemplation of what is balance. And of course, everyone's going to have a different idea of balance. The idea of giving to the less fortunate, giving to the poor, making a donation, when it represents less than 1% of a person's net worth that's wealthy, from my vantage point, is really a massive source of suffering. Each person's situation is unique, but the word token comes to mind, that the giving to the poor or the giving away to the less fortunate, for a very large percentage of the wealthy community, is token. So the question is something more like the original theme of tithing, where it's not only giving it, but it's giving something like 10%. It's something like giving a chunk that could change the whole world, can move the world from a place of predictable warring parties, rich and poor, this country, that country, to predictable cooperating parties, where something like that 10% would make all the difference in the world of giving people that are less fortunate an opportunity to really survive and thrive.
The fundamental thing you just raised, 10%. And I use myself as an example. Giving 10% just straight off the top, I begin to feel insecure. I begin to feel insecure, and at the same time, for me, that is completely irrational. And this conversation, this missing conversation about wealth and addiction and the versus the American dream, if you want to put it simply in simplistic terms, is nowhere to be found. People feel afraid. And you haven't mentioned this, but you have had a practice of psychotherapy with people of tremendous means. And we have all seen examples of lately pathological ways people are using their means, from buying their way into colleges, et cetera. So how does this missing conversation, American dream, the insecurity caused by tithing or giving something more than token, and the addiction to wealth, how does it get addressed?
Well, the first thing I would say is thank you for being willing to put yourself up as one of the people that's really struggling with it. And as I've teased you many times, you have a real problem. But more sincerely, you are one of the ideal examples of somebody, in spite of giving something that certainly approximates 10%, that you're wrestling with it. And so am I. I don't think I've found the answers. I've changed my view of my relationship to money and my relationship to reaching outside myself 3 times in the last 2 years in major ways. And I know I haven't arrived. How much am I going to leave to my son? How much am I going to leave to this friend that's unfortunate? And how much am I going to give to the world? This is something that we need to consciously suffer with, in a very positive kind of suffering, not guilt, but a real aspiration to be our best selves. And with this kind of constructive suffering, it's really the hope of the world.
Well, I don't know if your son's listening. If he's listening, I hope he's feeling some semblance of feeling okay about that conversation, that contemplation, that evolution of your relationship to money. But it's a big deal. And it's not, again, I know I've said this a couple of times, but it's not just if you already have wealth that I'm hearing you talk about. It's every little bit counts. Every person aspires because of the conditioning, as you've described it. So we're set as you said, from junior high, maybe even earlier, you know, to aspire. And that aspiration limits us. It limits our generosity. It limits our capacity to see everything around us in a way that we feel part of it.
Yeah. You mentioned something that's really very important, that at this stage of my career, pretty much every client that I'm seeing are successful and they realize that they're not fulfilled. And the ones that really are most devoted, dedicated to soul search, they love to be teased. They love to be called, you know, let's say, you know, your programming as to what matters in life is set up by an idiot. You know, it's set up by somebody that doesn't know what it means to be potentially fulfilled in the heart by including caring for people that really need help. And it's a playful teasing. It's really not designed to hurt anyone, but it's designed to really honor people like what you said about yourself, or, you know, even what I'm saying about myself, which is we don't know the answers. We just know there needs to be an arrow, and we all need to move in the direction of how can we be more inclusive of others that are less fortunate than us. And of course, if we're less fortunate than others, how do we survive? You know, not everyone has the luxury of asking that question. And so we want to include certainly people that are coming into the world, starting to form their values, parents that are starting to give those suggestions. You know, I think back to my childhood of seeing the Marlboro Man, and you know that he was cool together and smoking a cigarette and Mr. Cool. It's kind of another derivative of the American dream. I'm handsome, I'm young, I'm sexy, and I'm wealthy. And that's what really matters. That, you get there, man, you're going to be happy as hell. And really the literal thing is you're going to be happy as hell, right? You're going to be in hell. You're not going to be happy. Yes, you'll have some fun, but down deep, if you go a little bit under the surface, there aren't that many people that love you. There aren't that many people that you're close to because you're self-centered. And there's nothing wrong with being self-caring. As a matter of fact, there's everything right about being self-caring. But really being self-centered in such a severe way is a problem. And anything in between, I'm not here to judge. What I am here to try to encourage is there being an arrow moving in a direction of contemplation and asking ourselves these very important questions. Am I in the balance of taking care of myself and those I love and the world and the homeless population in this specific episode?
I want to ask you a question about something you just mentioned about your clients. You said they're successful, but they're not satisfied or happy. How can that be? How can that be? What is this talking about, a definition of success?
Yes. You know, as you and I know very well, because we did a conference at UCLA for 50 high schools that was called Being the Difference That Makes a Difference. And a big part of that was redefining success. Exactly on point with what we're talking about today. And I know neither one of us thought about this before, but the idea of success as being defined in material terms is so archaic, so primitive in our guts, that none of us are going to get over the feelings. We're all going to feel like if we give something away, oh, I feel more insecure. Oh, maybe I might need it for a crisis. Oh my God, this is a pandemic. This is one of my worst fears. What if three more happen? What if this lasts forever? Will I really have enough for my family? I've got to make sure to take care of my family first. I've got to have enough for a rainy day, for a rainy year, for a rainy life. And so it requires guts to challenge the deep-seated programs that we all have, that we all feel like we're betraying our sacred oath to protect ourselves and those we love. And so it would become normal and natural to be a bit disturbed when generosity starts to expand at any stage. As a parent or an educator, they're sort of like, well, am I sure that this is really right? You know, am I laying a trip? Is this a moral trip that's going to make people feel like I've got a ruler and I'm hitting them in the face if they take care of themselves? I certainly don't want to do that. But I do want them to expand their horizons to include other people that are less fortunate. If that's the situation they're in, they're not in the situation of being the less fortunate.
And connecting homelessness to this addiction, it seems like the American dream by necessity must have a screened view of the totality of what's around us in order to have that be part of what's so problematic in our life, at least in Los Angeles, for sure, in America, and in many parts of the world. So how do we connect homelessness, American dream, addiction to wealth? Where do those intersect?
Well, it seems to me that the bad news really is that this is something that's gone on through the history of time. That when power and wealth accumulates, it wants more of itself. And so that's something that, if we look back at Rome or the French Revolution or so many different fights, money was so often the source. Acquiring land, getting more power, so often the source of suffering and the source of war. So it's going to require a deeper introspection to say, are these priorities even sane? Are they actually not, at the deepest level, if we see what's happening, homicidal? We could take it that far to see them as the cause of genocide and the cause of war, whether it's a societal war or a country war. And the homeless population happens to be the symbol of the have-nots that we're dealing with today. And yes, the dream viewed the homeless as being unmotivated, undeserving, unentitled. Makes me think of a story that one of my close friends at the time, who came from a very poor neighborhood, said to me, "Do you feel entitled to have your bank account?" And I looked at her like she was crazy. This was like 35, 40 years ago. So what are you talking about? You know, do I want to just give you my money out of my bank account and just put your name in as a co-signer? No, I don't. But it has been a contemplation every decade, deeper and deeper, as I realized what she was really saying to me, which is, don't you really feel like you've been fortunate? You had the connections, you were raised in an upper middle class neighborhood and you knew people and your life was easier. And I was raised in a mobile home and we barely could survive month to month and we had to steal a little bit of food. Don't you feel like your bank account blurs a little bit with others? So we have been conditioned to believe there's damn good reasons why I am where I am. I earned it. I worked hard and I deserve every cent I have. And those people over there, if they were like me, they'd be in the same place as I am. That cognitive distortion needs to be deeply investigated by all of us.
And speaking to that exact point, that distortion, that cognitive dissonance, just this week I saw the 50 wealthiest Americans have a net worth of 165 million Americans, the poorest Americans. 50 on one side, 165 million on the other. And it's so important, given this series, given the programs, to connect. How do we transform this addiction into action that can make a difference, that can be part of the solution relative to the poorest, to the most disenfranchised? And what do we do? How do we help people participate right now?
I think the first key really has to start in the individual psychology, because I think to do anything beyond what you can see is futile. I think if we see exactly the kind of fact that you just presented, the outrage, and we really, again, in the left hand and the right hand, were able to hold that 50, 165 million. And we were really able to hold that for an hour. We'd either laugh, we'd cry, we'd feel inadequate, or we'd put our head in the sand. Because the travesty of that is so obvious if we keep it in our sight. And if we start to cognitively, in our mind, stop rationalizing that we're entitled because of the connections we had of where we were born. We were born in America rather than being born in the poorest parts of any of the third world countries. And another one of the really key distortions that I think is crucial for everyone to see is, well, I don't want to just give a money giveaway. That's the dominant way that the wealthy that are not investigating this rationalize that it's just another government program that's a giveaway. It's just another philanthropy program that's a giveaway. Rather than the absolute core principle of what I would call sanity, is giving opportunities for everyone to have a chance to have survival for themselves, for their kids. And if there's one thing to remember, wealth can be a wealth to give opportunities to everyone. And that doesn't mean one person has to solve it. We all have to wrestle with where we are. But it does mean, please, please don't say anything anymore in your mind about just giving away a free lunch. No, we're talking about opportunities for everybody to be their best self.
And in that regard, in that spirit, as I hope people are listening, they're feeling like they're participating, that this provokes ideas, that this provokes a desire to at least explore, to at least think about individual situations, but as importantly, wherever you are, wherever you live, whatever the circumstances in your city, the policies that have become ingrained in our world, in our government, that are manifestations of this very pattern, this addiction.
Yes. And it's so important that you, whoever you are, that you don't let the guilt button hit a kickout switch. The most common thing would be, oh, this is an attempt to make me feel guilty, and so I'm going to go back to my life and not really take a look. The whole attempt is to hit a part of your heart that can say, is this really going to make, let's say, my kids the happiest? Let's start with a parent that's pressuring their kids to get into the best university and is going to pull strings and pay a lot of money, or get into one of the expensive private schools. Now, again, that might be fine if that's in a balanced life. I don't have anything against private schools. I don't have anything against universities. I have something that admittedly is against that being one element of 100 that are all the same. That in every area, it's about how do I get ahead? How do I get mine ahead? And seeing that actually it's viewed as being a source of wisdom, fulfillment, common sense, and more accurately, it's at best a half-truth, fulfilling the potential to be successful. Great. But the other half has to do with our hearts. The other half has to do with our relationships to people around us. And so integrating those two requires thinking a bit out of the predictable box, predictable guidelines that we were all given, or maybe not all, but most of us were given as to what really success was. And success was really transferred into another word for fulfillment too. And what we're talking about is getting beyond the semantics, having something that is both successful and beneficial, both successful and caring. And when those are combined together, then there's a much greater possibility for individual fulfillment and interconnectedness. One of the things this reminds me of is one of the great documents in the history of our country, which is the Declaration of Independence, which so stressed equal opportunities. And I couldn't say it any better than that, even though there's been a lot of reflection on this recently, that when this was said, we had slaves. We had taken over the Indians, American Indians. And that injustice was like a complete compartmentalization that has existed since that time in a pretty extreme way. So I think if we can really look at one of our best founding documents, perhaps our best, and see that this is what we need to let in. Doesn't matter whether we're Republican or Democrat. We can see that at one level, we've all been hypocrites. We've all done things that we're not proud of. None of us are proud of having slaves, or virtually none of us are proud of having slaves, or treating the American Indians the way we did when we started. But it's so important that we see part of where we are psychologically is still in that split and compartmentalizing between our lives and those lives that don't have the same kind of opportunities that we do. And again, I want to honor everyone that doesn't have the opportunities every time I say that.
And I might add, because what you said is so hits me at the core. There are many of us today in this country that would say, righteously say, it hasn't changed. That the mistreatment, the view, the bigotry, the advantages and disadvantages, the kinds of opportunities, the kinds of disconnects between wealth and poverty exist in virtually the same way, or in today's updated world, the same way. And so then the question becomes translating, hopefully, what has become budding awareness or more awareness through this podcast series into policies, into moving ahead. And what can we do? How do we activate this?
Yeah. So I think part of the missing conversation is a nuance. And the nuance is, at one level, we've made some progress. Women can vote. Blacks can vote. Injustices are probably less common than they were, as horrible and unconscionable and heartbreaking as they are. And at the same time, we can't in any way afford to forget the Declaration of Independence. We need to remember that this is an imperative. This is much more sane than the American dream. And so for all of us to take that in and ask, how do I have my Declaration of Independence, which in a way is kind of a paradoxical term, because it's kind of the Declaration of Independence and the Declaration of Compassion, which is what makes it so profound. It's both take care of yourself and take care of others, which is really a very sane message.
I think what you're saying is that is the original American dream.
Exactly. And unfortunately, it didn't have legs in a serious way. It's not presented in school as, okay, let's see how our lives conflict with the American dream. That's not something that we're going to see in school, or there aren't too many parents that are going to promote that as well. And so again, this is not anti-success. This is pro-success and pro-consideration of opportunities for everyone that's alive, and especially focusing on the homeless. So I want to again invite you to communicate in any fathomable way that you can see to further the benefit of the homeless community, no matter where you live, no matter what your thoughts have been prior to now, your actions or your inactions, because this is going to require a vast team. And I welcome your input and really hope that you'll take this as a co-participant. Thank you very much.